unequivocal proof that this is CIA funded anime that was put into, you know, homes in the 90s.
Searching for and finding games at the Compton Cabal. Beyond what's just in the name at the Compton Cabal. See just at what cost comes fame at the Compton Cabal. So much for the finding games at the Compton Cabal.
Hello, welcome to the Cartoon Cabal. We are having a run through all of the episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion. This is Matt here. Over there, it's the Paranoid American. How's it going over there?
Oh, and let us also introduce the first human being, an embryonic atom.
Yes, yes, yes. The protozoa atom, something like that. What a cute little thing. I don't know. I guess he wasn't really cute, but...
clump of cells, maybe?
Clump of cells, yeah. Well, that's what they say, the baseless spine is the part you can't cut out or something. Well, don't know the pineal gland, according to... Anyway, maybe we're going to think about that more as we continue into this show. Today, the title... Well, there's always two titles for these. I'm looking at Asuka Strikes, but there is... What is the other one? You usually come in with the other one.
Oh, I usually do. I don't know if I've got... Oh, yeah, I do have it in front of me. It is Asuka Arrives in Japan.
Okay. Well, I guess she does arrive in Japan at the end, but they do spend most... Well, I guess they're above Tokyo or something, because at that one, the sequence where they have all the underwater stuff, it seems to be the old city or something. Gets a little confusing, I guess.
This one, to me, is probably the coolest ending so far. The episode's decent. It's not as good as some of like the action-packed ones, but the ending is really helping solidify that they do have something deeper and esoteric in store for us, and that it wasn't just tacked on. I really truly feel that now.
Okay, yeah, that was kind of your lost ba-bum moment or something, right? which we haven't had so many.
Yeah, I'm waiting for some like really like deep occult meat to sink my teeth into, like some actual Kabbalistic like preachings. And I guess this is the first one that seems like we're down that path.
I was briefly, I forgot the order of the scenes. I was like, what, you're that excited to see Asuka in junior high school? I was like, oh, wait, no, the last scene is the Adam, yes. they do such a little stinger there, and you think that's the end. So then it's kind of like the post-credit scene, but before the post-credits.
I'm just jumping directly to the highlight of this entire episode for me. It's the whole thing's a decent episode, but the last, I want to say 15 seconds is them pulling out this kind of credit card looking thing, like credit card sized holder, and inside of this little glass container is a human embryo, and they're talking about, we got it, this is the original human being, this is Adam. And they're talking about the actual little protozoic embryonic sort of like little fish tadpole thing, that is the original copy of Adam, I guess
that's like with viruses and things. They want to find patient zero. You got to find the source code, that sort of thing, right?
Or if you want to rewind time, if you want to say like, hey, we need to start over from scratch, then you would just need to go back to the original Adam.
Right. Yeah. It's like that seed bank they have or something. And Svalbard, am I saying that correctly?
I do like someone was like, all right, we're going to try this again. And this time, maybe no incest.
That's kind of the catch with the whole Adam thing. It's like, if you've got two people that, yeah, anything like this, people are like, wait a minute.
But maybe if you're so far removed, I mean, if we're talking the original Adam and you just pluck someone off the street, even if they were also derived from this original incest thousands of years ago, technically, wouldn't that be better than an immediate? I don't know. I don't know if we have any experts in that area.
Yeah. Well, again, it's 15 seconds in this episode, so I imagine we're going to get a little bit deeper into that as we go. Otherwise, this is supposed to be the fun episode. The last week and this week are supposed to be like the fun ones because, five and six were so intense. So it's like, here's your two not so intense episodes.
I guess. I think they were both fairly intense because they show, again, this quasi CIA agency bumping up against the government. And in this case, I also think we're getting this really clear picture that what the UN army is the largest army that's left in existence. There's really no such thing as individual countries having their own military, or even if they do, they dwarf in the size of the UN army. But the UN army is sort of like American stuff.
I was going to say the US Navy in here. It seems to be the US Navy, just with a little bit of, you know, window dressing, which.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what the UN is now, right? Isn't it
correct?
The US pays for the whole thing.
I mean, that was the whole thing with, like, you know, Eastern Europe and, you know, Yugoslavia or whatever. It's like, oh, we're sending in the UN. It's like, oh, that's Americans. I mean, being the age I am, I know about five guys who went to that, right? So, because if I joined the military, I probably would have ended up there as a UN soldier or something, right?
To me, it's a branding thing. It's just like Coke and Cherry Coke, where Cherry Coke's technically its own, completely own flavor. But they just like brand it alongside, but it's for people that maybe don't like just regular Coke or vice versa. That's kind of US military versus the UN forces. It's kind of the same, comes from the same factory. One of them just maybe tastes a little bit different, and it's catered to international markets more than the other. Maybe Fanta would be a better example. It's like the American army is Coca-Cola and the UN is Fanta.
Well, that makes sense with all the German stuff here, because Asuka's supposed to be, I don't know why her name's Asuka in that case, but she's supposed to be half German, half American. So it's kind of hard to tell nationalities in anime when everyone's got, you know, big eyes.
Well, 100%. And actually, sometimes when they have a big reveal, because there's another, I don't even know if it's a cliffhanger at the end of this episode, where they show Asuka is their teacher now in school. But at first I was like, I don't know if that's actually her or just someone that looks like her, because again, a lot of the facial expressions and everything look so similar that it's not that obvious to me.
Hold on, I'm having a little brain fart. I thought she was another student. Asuka transfers to she's a student. She's wearing a schoolgirl uniform.
I mean, I wouldn't know the difference between a Japanese schoolgirl or a teacher. So
teachers are going to wear normal professional clothes. Yeah, she's wearing the schoolgirl's uniform. It would be pretty weird for a teacher to wear that to school.
But not weird uniform. For her to wear the carcass of a dead fallen angel.
Right. But no, I mean, uniforms are still the thing, especially in junior. Yeah, they're in junior high, so they've all got uniforms. I think if you are in junior high school in Japan, you are wearing a uniform, is the general rule of thumb.
Speaking of wearing uniforms and little schoolgirls, this is the episode in which we get a twink Shinji crossdress to fight fallen angels for the Lord.
What's a plug suit? And I thought that was a weird name. Have we heard them say plug suit before? Or is this the first time? I guess they are going in a plug, so makes sense.
I guess, but this was clearly one of Asuka's leftover uniforms. It was made for her body, no?
It is, but they seem to like vacuum seal or something when you put it on. So I think they might be unisex, except that no one's wearing them except for the pilot. So, and that, you know. Maybe they had a German designer fashion it for her. Or something.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading into it, but I feel like he had a brassiere woven into his costume because they were going into her Eva. So he had to wear one of her.
He might have, because at the end when his friends see him, he's like, oh, like trying to like, you know, I like so. Drink up know. As I much as possible.
He's cross dressing throughout this entire episode.
I guess even with his normal. Eva suit, you know, those little hair things still just makes him look like he's doing his hair up or something. I mean, I know he's not. It's just that's what it looks like. That's kind of like my least favorite design element of the show, to be honest. I don't like those little hair things.
Also, you mentioned the German. I want to give a shout out to one of our viewers. This is from Christian Cherbauer, 2899. But this is the comment. To have a more nuanced analysis of the show and terms, look up every word used in German. Many of the terminology of the organizations are based on the German language, like nerve. Remember, Japan has a deeper connection to German philosophy than the West, since they were allies in World War II. So I just thought that was interesting, and I hadn't considered that before, that technically, yeah, Japan and German were connected during World War II as allies with each other. So maybe instead of trying to decipher all this Kabbalah in English terms, we got to look up some of the German interpretations of the words and the phrases and some of the symbolism. Fortunately, I'm not an expert on German symbolism, but I can definitely try.
Yeah, because here we get about two sentences where Asuka's trying to pilot the Eva in German, and then apparently thoughts also affect it. So the fact that Shinji's thinking in Japanese is a problem, so she switches it back. But yeah, there's a few words in German on the screen. Of course, she says a few things.
I looked up to see exactly what she was saying.
Oh, what is she saying?
So what she says is NCL filling. I'm not sure what the NCL thing meant. Beginning of movement, beginning of nerve connection, release of left leaning, synchro start now. And I'm sure some of that is probably a little bit just Google Translate butchered, but there were real phrases that she was mentioning. Although I also want to point out that these are the translations of the subtitles, because what she was actually saying was definitely not what the subtitles were saying. So there's at least three different versions of what she might have actually been saying in these parts.
Yeah, I was wondering how the English dub dealt with it, which I could have done by just switching and checking, but I didn't do that. But, you know, is it like, oh, you're thinking in English and she's speaking in German? Is that how
it was all in German. And then at the end, she goes, screw it, I'll switch to English. And then she says it in English. And also, I didn't watch it in this version yet, but for this episode, the special audio track in the collector's edition, it's actually the voiceover actress for Asuka, I believe. And it's her first time ever kind of doing a recorded over director's cut style audio track. So I didn't listen to that version, but I might go back and re-listen to it to see if she's got any extra insight that the first VO director didn't.
Hmm. I had some German in junior high school, but again, junior high school, I forgot that German, but I was sitting there, I can understand a little bit of this, which I understood a lot more of the Japanese than her German sentence, but
hope you did. Yeah.
Yeah. let's see, what else do we got here? This is another weirdly horny episode, for some reason. I guess that's just considered to be comedy. Like pure comedy, which seems Asuka keeps calling Shinji a pervert, and they're like, I feel like this episode is being a bit of a pervert, which maybe that's why my wife didn't like the t-shirt. I don't know.
Which is, yeah, that I think that this series has a weird connotation to it that's trapped in a moment in time, but I think that the show is definitely pushing that aspect, because every time that she can basically accuses him of being a pervert, I do think it's for comedic relief, because he's clearly too awkward to be a pervert. Like, he's not even cool enough to be a pervert. You know what I mean? He's a little too vanilla for that. So it's not true. And they keep bringing it up to just sort of embarrass him. But it does sort of age this a little bit again.
The other way this aged, and this has nothing to do with anything, but the Fly Me at the Moon at the end of this one was kind of the proto Shibuya K style, which was late 90s music, kind of, you know, lounge. It's like trying to make 60s lounge music using electronic tools or something. And, you know, when I first came to Japan, it was still kind of petering out. So the ending Fly Me a Moon on this one was more of a nostalgia trip than usual for me. I was like, oh, that feels like walking around Tokyo when I first came to Tokyo.
Okay. This is also back when they were trying to make swing a thing again.
I think that was more America.
I mean, America's version was they were trying to bring back zoot suits and swing dancing.
And I remember that hit right when I was a freshman in university. So I never bought a zoot suit, but I did go to a few. I went to a few swinger parties. So that's not what I wanted to sound like. I went to a few places where they are playing swing music, and I knew a few people who took Big Bad Voodoo Daddy seriously.
Zoot Suit Riot.
I don't know. Should I even zoot?
Swing back a bottle of beer.
I mean, I got my Zoot Cat poster back here, for every time we've ever done this. So
I got it. Was a moment in time, man. It was a moment in time. And that's also, again, this series, watching it, you can tell that it's not a 2020s anime. You can tell it's a 90s anime.
I guess we do have to call out sort of Wizard of Oz things, because that's always a thing, and, you know, looking at diving in deep on shows and things. So it's the Harry S. Truman aircraft carrier has been renamed the Over the Rainbow. So
correct. I also had, man, I had some other Oz notes in here. One of them was that they have this whole transformation scene where the two of them go inside of the one Ava. And now you've kind of got the male and female energies combined. And they even hinted that the combination of the two of them set some sort of record. I guess they're keeping track, and it's synchronized 7 seconds faster Or that there were something called like hyper synchronized for 7 seconds, and that in itself set some sort of like a limitation. And I was just thinking that this Ava is kind of like Asuka's glass coffin kind of thing. So there might even be like a Snow White tie-in where, in this case, Shinji, I guess, gets to be Prince Charming that penetrates this glass coffin that she's in and then like brings her back to life, because he kind of has done that like in the actual show so far.
Well, yeah, 2 episodes ago, right? No, since I was digging on the Fly Me a Moon, I didn't know that we actually got previews at the end of these, because usually I stop the thing. But yeah, it was like, it looks like that's next episode, basically. Like, how are they going to work together? It did seem weird she wanted him to come with her, though, because we've never seen it's clear the plug is not made for two people, because right. he's like, don't touch me. It's like, well, what'd you expect? There's no chair there.
I didn't understand why. I mean, I get if you want to get into like the symbolic, alchemical, yada yada, but what about the practical reason? Why did Shinji get inside the Ava with her?
Is she showing off? I mean, at the end, she's a student, so she's 14. You got to be 14 to pilot these, right? That's why she can't be the teacher.
Right, and the UN guy was taken back by this. Apparently, the things that Nerve are doing are unknown to the rest of the militarized world, because if the UN is running the entire world's military, and even that guy was like, wait a minute, are those kids? Like that sounded like a kid. And the Nerve response is just like, oh no, don't worry about that. Like we're taking care of the problem. So,
but clearly it seems in Japan, they know, though. It seems Japanese know, because in that corporate meeting yesterday, I mean, that is corporate level, but, and it seems like in Tokyo 3, everyone knows. Of course they're seeing it happen, so that might be part of why, but yeah, it seems more of a shock to, I wrote Captain Chip on the shoulder than, which Masato even goes and like explains his chip on the shoulder, you know, as the episode goes on. So I didn't feel bad about giving him that nickname.
Very prophetic of you.
I did find it actually. Yeah. How she's finessing the situation this episode is pretty impressive. I guess that's why she gets to be the operations lady, you know, and spend the rest of the time getting hammered.
Also, I just put this together. Forgive me if you've mentioned this already, but Asuka's middle name is Langley.
Langley did. Is that spelled the same? I did see her name, and let me. Oh, got it. L A N G L E Y. Okay, so okay. Do they write Asuka Ranguri? Okay,
just seem like
just check in the Japanese. Same in Japanese. So yeah. I assumed it would be. I just, you know.
So there you go. In unequivocal proof that this is CIA-funded anime that was put into, you know, homes in the 90s.
Or JAXA. I mean, it could be homegrown, you know, like military support or something. Well, JAXA's space. It's not military, but... Or is it? I'm just trying to think of the techiest, you know, organization that we have in Japan that we know the name of. See, Japan, secret organizations in Japan, we don't know who they are. We don't even, I mean, I'm sure we have an FBI, but we never hear about it, you know?
You know what, like the Black Dragon Society.
Yeah, it's the Black Dragon Society. Or maybe the Yakuza is just like taking care of everything. I don't know. There is a weird thing where the Yakuza, unless they're getting violent and like, you know, having fights in Tokyo izakayas, which has happened, they tend to be kind of left alone. There's this weird insinuation that, I don't know about in 2025, but certainly like 25 years ago, like, oh, Yakuza kind of greases the wheels of society as long as they're not being annoying, which I don't know if that's a good viewpoint or not, but that's kind of how it rolled.
In Japan, I don't know. Have you ever heard of a guy named Benjamin Fulford? He was like a financial analyst. I think he wrote for Forbes or something like that. And he moved to Japan. And he started writing for financial newspapers in Japan, but he claimed among many, many things, but one of them was that he met a White Dragon Society in Japan that told him that they were a combined good version of the Illuminati that was fighting this international black hat Illuminati. And it was called the White Dragon Society. And I've actually heard this before. I believe it comes from Iron Fist, the Marvel Comics series. They also had a White Dragon Society in Japan that was acting as like these good guys. So I don't know if it was conflated or if the comic book was based on a real White Dragon Society. Have you ever heard of that or of Benjamin Fulford?
I haven't, but that's kind of my point. Like, they have to be in Japan. We have to have these organizations, but they're like even less on the surface than they are in the States in general. But yeah, I mean, one thing in Japan is it's like, you know, it's a national government, not a federal government. So it actually is in charge of the whole country. So it's a little more of a, you know, anywhere you look in Japan, same police uniforms, same general look to all the services and stuff. Because in America, state to state can look very different. City to city, you'll have different police cars, different police uniforms. Always going to be the same thing in Japan because it's a national system.
Well, again, the leaning on the UN, aka America.
Leaning on the UN. I mean, there is, you know, people, well, there's lots of places that get the joke, but Japan always gets the 51st state joke, you know? So.
Wait, Japan does?
We've got, oh, with expats here, yeah, we've had the joke before. I mean, remember, we got U.S. military bases all over Japan. Okinawa would like them to leave, please, you know?
Okay, no, I don't doubt that. I've heard a lot of other places call the 51st state, too.
That's why I was kind of, like, leaving the angle that maybe it's not just Japan, but there's certainly talk of that in Japan. The most the U.S. military's ever gotten on my nerves is when I was in Okinawa and we were staying at a place. And the good snorkeling was just north of there. And that was a U.S. Air Force base that you couldn't go to. I'm like, hey, I'm a U.S. citizen. Why can't I snorkel there? Probably because they're doing experiments. That's why.
Can't do that in Antarctica either for a couple reasons, but for military reasons.
I don't want to snorkel in Antarctica. That doesn't sound fun. It sounds cold and gray.
You'd be one of the first, man. You'd be a trendsetter.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, music take since last week we had like the goofy house music. This one, I thought it was weird when they first land on a ship. And for some reason, Misato has told them while they're on a date, which I'm like, why'd you do that? But whatever. And then they start playing like Frontierland music. I'm like, that's a weird choice for getting on an aircraft carrier. It's like, I'm like, what?
You know, because it was an American aircraft carrier. I think it was an American.
Oh, thing. Yes. That's why it sounds like Frontierland, which is called Westernland in Tokyo Disney. So, okay, Westernland. See, I'm thinking cowboys, not boats, right? So, okay.
Right. But I mean, cowboys is, yeah, I mean, that's American. That is the American stereotype, which again is why, aside from the fat tourist version, but historically, the American stereotype has usually been a badass. It's usually been like a cool person, like a cowboy or something.
Yeah, we got the Billy the Kid steakhouses here and there in Japan. So, yeah, that's a thing. And it I love it when
in Paris, too.
Oh, right now they're doing a American baseball promotion at the 7-Eleven. And they have like, you know, hot dog, right? It's like longer in the bun, blah, blah. They put relish on it. There's boxes of American slop. It's like French fries, pulled pork, cheese, barbecue sauce. And then it's like spaghetti and like this kimchi thing. It gets weird. I'm like, so yeah, it's like they really missed like understanding what people would eat for baseball or whatever in America. And baseball is a big thing in Japan. So I haven't been. I don't know if they're eating yakisoba at baseball games or what.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's exactly what that miso soup, the whole thing.
My daughter's been invited to some pro games, but I didn't get to go. That's sad. It was a snarky comment someone sent me. And I'm not going to find it anyway. I'm doing a bad thing about searching while talking. So let me look at my notes. Oh, we meet, is it Kaji? Let me look up his name again. I had it right there. Ryoji Kaji, who he's kind of the handler guy with the worst ponytail. You can't trust him because of that ponytail. That's my take on our new character. Sato's old boyfriend, I guess.
Well, but it's the 90s, so I don't know if that necessarily checks out for 90s. Can you trust someone with a ponytail ever is the real question, but I think more so in the 90s than now in the 2020s.
Well, we're only a few years removed from Tim Robbins and his ponytail in High Fidelity, so
in that one that was beyond its sort of death date. I think
it was, that's why it worked. I guess here it's still legit. I don't know. So, but I took it as a design cue of like, I can't trust this guy. He looks like a doofus. And then he gets out, you know, he gets out, he hightails it because daddy boss has told him, you know, he's got Adam, so he has to get out of there, doesn't he? I mean, it does make sense, but everyone else is just like, you know, loser, he's leaving.
There was a couple other things too that I think we're understanding the rules of this series. One of those is that the UN's weapons do not work against these fallen angels, period. They were basically telling them, you're wasting your missiles. None of this is going to work. And then they say that it's hand-to-hand combat that is the most effective. So they bring out, you know, the Ava, and then it has to be an Ava too. I assume that hand-to-hand combat as a human to one of these fallen angels,
that's probably a bad idea.
So the Ava doing hand-to-hand combat with these angels, the only thing that matters. So here's the rules, is that it's got to be piloted by a 14-year-old. You have to use these weird organic creatures that are trapped inside mech bodies, and you have to use hand-to-hand combat. That seems like the three rules that we know about so far, right?
A prog knife, you know, sounds like something ever Emerson, Lake, and Palmer might use, you know? And although the Ava pries open the mouth of the angels, and then they sacrifice two battleships, blasting all their guns on the way in. So in that case, I guess the UN weapons are effective if you can, you know, kind of a firecracker from the inside it.
Right. Well, and I don't know if you've seen the series or read the comic book The Boys, but this was also the premise of one of the very first major deaths in that series. The premise of the series of The Boys, if you're not familiar with it, is that a bunch of normal people that know others that died due to collateral damage, like Superman saves someone by making sure a car doesn't fall on them, but then the car falls on somebody else. And it's just a collection of these scorned family members that have lost friends and family due to this collateral damage of superheroes in their city. Anyways, there's a scene where they kidnap one of these superheroes that has impenetrable skin, like he's got bulletproof skin or something. They're trying to figure out how they can take this guy out. And eventually they realize that it's through an anal plug. But it's the same concept, basically. It's what's the movie with Bruce Willis and Liv Tyler? It's basically Armageddon, right? Like you.
That's what I meant when they said when I said you got a firecracker. That's the scene I was thinking of.
So I guess Armageddon and The Boys.
There we go. And actually, there's a intimation that in Godzilla versus Kong, the underwater attack scene might possibly be inspired by this episode, if you've seen those. Although I was just saying yesterday, I remember everything that happened in Godzilla Minus One. High recommendation. I enjoyed watching Godzilla versus Kong and Godzilla X Kong, and I can't remember what was in what movie or exactly what happened in either movie. So
I only remember the Matthew Broderick one still, and I just remember that it was like a female that laid a bunch of eggs.
Oh, right. That one is not the worst. I think the biggest problem there is just Godzilla changes scale from scene to scene, which is always annoying. But I mean, that's just that we talked about that being in a REID and our regular stuff a few weeks ago. Right. So
that's one thing I'll say. Ava, I think, is doing a pretty decent job with is that the scale does seem consistent.
Yeah. Let's see. Is there anything else I wanted to throw at you before we finish today? Third Branch, bad name for a German organization. that's about it. I could start reading off ship names, which might be interesting, but we do need to start wrapping things up for today. So any thoughts you want to do?
The last one is just that the very intro scene of this was also really kind of cool because it shows the head honcho in a huge white empty room. And it had a very ivory tower Illuminati feel to it. And he's just making calls.
And we got that last week too. Cause I had just a second like, oh, did I put in last week's episode again? So we're spending a little more time in his Sephiroth room. Yeah.
Yeah. We're definitely getting this idea that if there is an Illuminati in this show, that this guy is the big eye on top of it.
My favorite is still the Metalocalypse one with the Illuminati guys talking every episode and nothing they ever like the band Deathlocked like never figures out their existence because they're not effective. So that's
another good reason to have Cartoon Cabal is that we can get to Metalocalypse. There was also another one called Minora Team that was Adult Swim, I think maybe 15-20 years ago, that was all about like these Illuminati guys. So yeah, I've got a list cooking. I showed you the list already.
You show me a list. It is not short. Yes. I guess we should wrap up for today then, and we'll get a little more into watching these two try and pilot one Ava together next week, I guess. I don't know. Or and they're in different ones. I was listening to the preview. I wasn't watching it, so
we'll figure it out as we go. I kind of like doing these just a little ad hoc.
Okay, well, what you up to?
The biggest one, man, go to IlluminatiComic.com. If you want to know about the actual historical Bavarian Illuminati, if you want to know about all the different rumored versions of the Illuminati and the pop culture references, if you've ever just heard it and it sounds cool, but you don't know what the heck that's all about, figure it out. You can go to IlluminatiComic.com and get a little Chick Track style pamphlet. It's about the equivalent of a full blown modern comic book. And it explains the very origins all the way to modern day versions of this. So I don't think there's anything else like it on the planet. It is the most comprehensive illustrated guide to the Illuminati ever created. So IlluminatiComic.com.
In my end, I will talk to you all day about media, Podcastio, podcastius.org. You can go there. Time Enough Podcast. We just finished talking about the Twilight Zone and Prison. We're talking about Severance, which has a whole lot of, weird stuff along these lines to check out. So check out those podcasts and watch out for breezes and don't go commando if you're wearing a skirt. What the hell?
Ready for a cosmic conspiracy about Stanley Kubrick, moon landings, and the CIA? Go visit NASACOMIC.com.
NASACOMIC.com, CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on, that's why we're singing this song. I'm NASACOMIC.com. Go visit NASACOMIC.com. Go visit NASACOMIC.com. com, CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on, that's why we're singing this song. I'm NASACOMIC.com. Go visit NASACOMIC.com. Go visit NASACOMIC.com. Yeah, go visit NASACOMIC.com.
Never a Straight Answer is a 40-page comic about Stanley Kubrick directing the Apollo space missions.
Yeah, go visit NASACOMIC.com.
This is the perfect read for comic, Kubrick, or conspiracy fans of all ages. For more details, visit NASACOMIC.com.
Paranoid. I scribble my life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlighten your brain? Give you the flight, my plane. Paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real to real. You will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional, hey, maybe your language, your game, how they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cause, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you out nuclear bomb, distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees, blow it off in the face. You're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat. Paranoid American, must be all the blood smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit. We get heavy rotate when the beat hits, so thank us. You're welcome. Fuck the niggas for real. You're welcome. They ain't never had a deal. You're welcome, man, they lacking appeal. You're welcome, yet they doing it still. You're welcome.